Welcome to a second special edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr. I thought all of our podcasts were special.
Well, some are more special than others, Scott. You're right. They are all special. And what makes this one particularly special today is we have Mike Miller with us. And Mike is a trail runner and was the first to respond to our initial with Candace Burt special edition about the PCT trail. So we went on, and if you haven't heard that podcast, you can shut this one, pause this one for a moment, go back and listen to part one and listen to Candace's position about her petition and about her concern for the Pacific Crest Trail.
And the thing that surprised us is, you know, when we heard Candace and talked to her, we just said, well, yeah, duh.
Yeah.
We need to support this. This, you know, we're trail runners. We need to support this. And when we published the podcast, we were surprised how many people had a differing opinion. And Mike was one that reached out to us, and mm-hmm. we're grateful for that, and said, hey, listen, I'm a trail runner. There's another side to this story. And we decided, you know what? We need to listen to the other side of the story.
Right. So the very next morning after the podcast, Mike chimes in with a well-written email. So we could tell that he was his thoughts are clear. And we'd like to welcome you to discuss some of these thoughts. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So you're a trail runner. Give us just a little bit of history, because it's good to know that if you're taking the view of maybe the opposite that we heard, tell us your experience and your resume a little bit, so we know you're people of the trail.
Sure. I've been running trails off and on most of my life. My background is as a wildlife biologist, and so a lot of times for different jobs that I've had, just moving fast through the woods, and sometimes I just wanted to get home in time to sleep, so I had to run. I started running a little bit more seriously. I was more of a mountain biker kind of thing for years. Started running a little bit more seriously about 10 years ago, and ran my first ultra in 2010 in Copper Canyon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I've been down there four times. I've run, I don't do super long distances. I'm more of a 50K kind of person. But mm-hmm. I've run, some hard 50Ks, and I've run Speed Goat and Jimenez and Pace at Hard Rock and some things like that. So, I've been around.
So Mike, we like to categorize us or characterize trail runners as mm-hmm. as people that are environmentalists. I mean, we love going out on the trail. We like
sure.
to protect our trail. We kick the person in front of us if they drop a goo wrapper, and we try to clean up after ourselves when we're running races or whether we're running just on a training run. Mm-hmm. And I assume you're in the same, especially as a wildlife biologist, you're in the same camp. Why do you have a differing opinion about this whole PCTA stance?
Well, I think it goes back to my background as a biologist, and there's a field of biology called conservation biology,
mm-hmm.
Which overlaps quite a bit with wildlife biology. They're not totally the same thing, but conservation biology is focused more on how do we make sure that we maintain ecosystems and populations of wildlife species? And so within that field of conservation biology, there is kind of a subfield that deals with the design of reserve networks. And so a reserve network would be, multiple protected areas connected by linkages. And it turns out that those linkages are really important, because there's no single protected area, whether it be a national park or a wilderness area, that's large enough to maintain viable populations of a lot of wildlife species, particularly larger carnivore species and those kinds of things that need more space.
Go ahead, Mike. If you want to finish that thought, I have a question.
No, go ahead.
So you're not opposed to people using the trail or being out on the trail. It seemed to me from the email exchange that it was more to the point of large groups. Is there an impact on this trail system that and these ecosystems that you're talking about if there's larger groups that are moving through?
Well, sure. I mean, the more people that are out there, the more disturbance is going to be. And so one thing with these reserve networks, typically you'll have a core area that's a park or a wilderness area or someplace where there's a strong protection. And then it's surrounded by some kind of buffer area that's maybe a national forest where they allow logging, more roads, more activity, but there's still good habitat. And then that's surrounded by places where people have priority. But, even with, let's look at the example of Yellowstone, because it's our biggest national park. It's about 2 million acres. There's 16 million acres of national forest surrounding it in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. And that's still not enough to preserve the genetic diversity of grizzly bears. There's, and so in order to keep those populations viable, there needs to be movement between, the Yellowstone ecosystem and glacier and some other areas. And Yellowstone's kind of unique because it's, the furthest south population of grizzly bears, and it's not connected directly with, the population in Glacier and Canada.
So Mike, you're an expert. Can you actually see and measure the changes that a large trail race places on this system? Can you walk by and go, my goodness, for the last 10 years, Western States has crossed through this area, and this is really, really tragic that they've done this. Can you measure it or even see it?
Sure, with plenty of money and lots of people. Biologists usually don't have those kinds of tools available to them all the time. But we do know that, these linkages between these core areas are extremely important. They're vital. And those linkages are the hardest part to do. I mean, it's easy to preserve Yellowstone or Yosemite. Most people want that. But in between, there's ranchers and, not too fond of the government coming in and telling them what they can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. So, that's a really hard sell to linkages. And that's one of the most important parts.
Well, I think ideally, mm-hmm. if we wanted to protect these areas, ideally, we'd make them wilderness areas and say nobody's allowed on the land. That's the ideal thing. But the PCT has been, in this example, has been designated for a recreational use area, mm-hmm. which allows people to hike the whole, through hike the PCT, hiking sections like the John Muir Trail. I guess the one thing that I'm seeing is the PCTA is advocating and even advertising, this Reese Witherspoon movie Wild, which is going to have, mm-hmm. I think, an increased impact of the number of people that are hiking parts or through hiking the entire trail. And these people, I don't know whether they even have any type of culture like we feel we have in the trail community of protecting the trail.
Yeah, but Scott, those might be individuals taking off, but not large groups. And
correct,
I think really,
correct.
The position here is large groups that are migrating through, and groups of 300 with bibs on.
Yeah,
and I think you're right. There will be an impact from that movie, but still, there's not going to be that many people that actually don't take off the summer and through hike the trail. And there will be, individuals or small groups. But what the PCT does, if you were going to design a linkage all along the West Coast, you would draw it pretty much along the Pacific Crest Trail. And so, even though it wasn't originally designated for that purpose, when it was created in 1968, biologists, there wasn't even such a thing as conservation biology at that time. Mm-hmm. But because it's protected as a scenic trail and it protects a lot of habitat along that route, and you know, people are concerned about it. And so, so it's, you know, I would say that it's really important. And I don't think we need to keep people off. And I don't think, you know, even having, you know, the Cascade Crest, you know, which runs along 50 miles of it, the Cascade Crest 100, you know, one or, you know, two events on the trail, you know, one day a year, it's certainly not going to harm anything. You know, when Candace was on your podcast, she listed like 10 or 12 that actually run on the Pacific Crest Trail. And again, that's over 2,000 miles of trail. So, but, you know, our sport is really growing. It's growing exponentially. I mean, just in the 5 years since I ran my first ultra, I think there's 3 or 4 times as many races out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if everybody that wanted to put on a race was allowed to, you know, to run along the Pacific Crest Trail, there's going to be a lot more use. And runners, I mean, in races, there's different types of impacts that we have. People tend to run at night, so there's headlights, and that's typically when animals would be moving. That's different than hikers would have. So there's, you know, there are some impacts. I don't think what we have now is awful. I'm not going to, you know, get on the phone and, you know, try and stop any races that are ongoing. But I think, you know, it points out that there's reasons to stop and think about what we're actually doing. And maybe there are some places that we don't need to have a race. You know, nobody's trying to say you can't go around. Mm-hmm. But maybe there are some places where we don't need to have a race.
To that point, Mike, is it possible that we could lose Western States, or we could lose Angeles Crest or Waldo 100K or some of these races that are really the foundations of our mm-hmm. sport and the things that we go back to and compare runners of today to runners of yesterday's? It's like changing the baseball or the bat or the field. You know, it's sometimes it's nice to keep things consistent in a sport, to have a measuring stick. And to lose a Western States means to not only lose that, but to lose that to share with next generations. And what concerns me is when you start to legislate and change and take away, that we could lose something very dear to us. Do you think that's even possible, or we could find ourselves in that place?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure that that's even what PCTA is advocating for.
Uh-huh.
I would say so. And this would be the second part of my argument about why maybe there's some places where we ought not have a race. Mm. And that's, you know, we do have impacts on other trail users. Not, you know, the runners that I know are wonderful people. They're considerate, they're thoughtful, they have a good environmental ethic. Not everybody's like that, you know, and hikers, some of them don't want to be, have 100 people, you know, pass them in an hour, you know, when they're out there trying to get away from it all. And some may not mind, but some do. Yeah. And obviously some do, or there wouldn't be this issue in the first place. So, you know, I'll go back to some of my experience as a mountain biker, even from back in the 80s, you know, when mountain bikes first started becoming popular, you know, the hikers didn't like it at all. They got together and they started banning mountain bikes on a lot of trail systems. Mm-hmm. And the mountain bikers took this kind of antagonistic standpoint at first. They said, hey, you know, we're taxpayers. We, you know, they work for us. They should listen to us. And we should, you know, we have a right to the trails and we have a right to some things. And, you know, they made a lot of people angry. And they lost a lot of trails. And then, you know, they started realizing that, hey, this is kind of this antagonistic approach, it's not working at all for us. You know, we're losing because, you know, hikers, there's a lot more of them. They've been around for a lot longer. They've had a lot invested in it. They've worked to get some of this land protected in the first place and build the trails and that kind of thing. And, you know, typically we're older and they would go to public meetings and votes. And so, you know, mountain bikers, they lost a lot in their first 10, 15 years. And they started getting smarter and saying, hey, you know, we're not going to take this antagonistic oppositional approach anymore. We're going to stop and look at the big picture. And, you know, we want to be a partner with you guys and work on on some solutions so we can all enjoy the trails. And they've built, you know, lots of trails in, you know, in around Durango over the last 15 years. You know, they built over 100 miles of trails that everybody can use. And, you know, they worked with them to say, hey, you know, yeah, we yield the trails to hikers, we yield the trails to horses, and they self-police themselves to, you know, hey, we got to go slower and we got to be respectful and everybody has to be super nice or we're going to lose the ability to mountain bike. And, you know, now they're respected members of the trail community.
All right, Mike, so one of the reasons we wanted to as Scott and I bounced the idea back and forth of do we do this podcast and do a follow-up mm-hmm. like this was, well, perhaps we can become better stewards of the trail. Perhaps we can learn something from Mike who could share with us as trail runners. What can we do anything to help protect this the opportunity to spend time on the trail, even as races, even racing to preserve our western states, etc., the 12 or so that Candace may have stated. So
I would say you're more likely to lose that with that kind of oppositional approach and saying, hey, we're going to demand our right to have races wherever we want. And then, you know, you're going to make people angry and they might say, hey, you know, we're going to ban everything. And they might win because there's a lot more of them. Mm-hmm. And but if we, you know, take a more compromised approach and say, hey, you know, we're going to work with you guys and, you know, we agree. There's some places there needs to be some limits on how many races we have and how many people we put out there and some timing and things like that. And, you know, we'll work with you guys. And, you know, then we become accepted and we work together. And you know, we don't have people that are angry at us and that would take drastic steps like saying, hey, no more using the PCT for any races at all.
Right. You know? And well, there's permitting out there now that helps contain some of the races.
Sure.
And that fact, that's why the huge lottery at Western States is because there is that that permit. So there is some control and we do ask permission and we're granted permission to get out there. So I think that's a good piece of it.
You know, I think that the important thing here is if you are a trail runner, mm-hmm. you need to get out there and protect the trail. So don't just pay your race fee or don't just go out and train on the trail. Make sure you take some time and volunteer for these work groups that go out on the trail and help rebuild and reconstruct and protect the trail.
And create relationships.
Yeah, and so they see us out there right. as advocates of the environment rather than just somebody that's out there ripping it up.
Right, right.
So, Mike, we appreciate you coming on. We're grateful that you have a different opinion. We like to look at things differently. You know, we've looked at Hokas and we've looked at Tarahumara sandals. So,
I have a pair of Lunas on my feet right now.
See, there you go. You know, we like to look at different things and create balance like you do as a runner, create balance in your life. And so we appreciate the time that you've taken with us today.
All right. Thanks very much.
Scott, I think that was a nice conversation. I think Candace had her opportunity to speak about her position, and Mike was able to express his position.
Yeah, make your own decision now and support who you will.
Now go out and run.
Mass.